Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined with our super producer, Paul Deckett. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. It's a little bit difficult for the three of us opening this show to not speak in a transatlantic accent, which all of us love. And I would say the three of us are pretty good at it, although Paul might be the best.
So far, Paul's the winner.
Yeah, you're really shining with that today, Paul. Today's subject requires us to travel back in time, back to 1957, the dawn of what is called the space age.
1957, year of space and Sputnik dogs. Laika, first space traveler, was ready for the takeoff. And here it is. Miles, the half-ton satellite joined the meteors in outer space to orbit around the Earth at 18,000 miles an hour with its passenger. A shocked America attempted to launch a grapefruit-sized satellite on the Vanguard rocket with disastrous results. In the shadow of the Eiffel Tower and Sputnik, President Eisenhower, French Prime Minister Gaillard, and other NATO leaders gathered in Paris to consider the peril. Their decision? That three European nations would be armed with intermediate-range missiles. The magic of President Eisenhower was a rallying force to an undecided conference. And to give added impetus to its purpose, word was received of the successful launching of the Atlas intercontinental missile, an answer in part at least to Russia's space supremacy. In the rocket's fiery wake was America's sober realization that the battle had just been joined and that the work of self-preservation was at hand in 1958, the dawn of the space age.
Okay, so what we heard there was the story of the first dog in space that we know of.
Laika.
Mm-hmm. The first living creature to orbit Earth for a time. So the first satellite ever, again, that we know of, mm-hmm. is a Soviet satellite launched on October 4th in 1957. It's Sputnik 1. Later that year, in November, I believe, of 1957, Laika is launched on Sputnik 2.
Yep.
And has a tragic end that was covered up for a long time. But in this period of time, during the Cold War, the U.S. was less concerned about the fate of one Soviet dog, and they were instead in a massive panic over the idea of being beaten out of the space race.
That was the thing of most high import. Don't be beaten in the space race, because whoever controls space, as we've learned from both land and sea,
controls the universe.
That's it. That's it. It's just the next battlefield, or at least that was mm-hmm. – it was thought as that.
And it seems like the thinking has returned to that place with our current administration.
Space Force.
It's simultaneously yay and oh, God.
Well, don't we have a Space Force? Isn't it called NASA? It's a confusing thing.
NASA's a little more peaceful. They're not really a force. Mm-hmm. They're more just like neutral. They just kind of go check things out, poke around in space. The Space Force, you know, ideally will have space weapons.
Yeah, right. Lasers.
Space missiles.
What if they just add force to the end of NASA and it's NASA Force? It doesn't have the same ring as Space Force.
You should fill out a comment card, Ben.
for NASA or for
just
Space
the
Force?
The administration.
We'll just, we'll tweet them. I'm sure that'll work, right? It's true, though. The nation was in a panic, and rightly so, and we are kind of returning to these fears in the modern day. The result of the reaction to the Soviet launch of Sputnik 1 and Sputnik 2 was the formation of things like NASA and the formation of what we today call DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. This is real-life mad science. If you're a longtime listener of the show, then you have doubtlessly either heard us examine this mysterious entity or you have found it in your own personal research. It was originally just called ARPA, just Advanced Research Projects Agency, but then they added defense to it.
Yeah, because it's not about offense, guys.
And as it turns out, Al Gore didn't invent the internet at all.
Oh.
It was ARPA. The ARPANET.
The ARPANET.
Isn't that right? It was a military.
He did have a hand in it, though.
Did he really?
I don't want to take anything away from Mr. Gore.
Well, I mean, surely he didn't single-handedly.
Right. He didn't single-handedly.
With a click of the mouse.
No.
But it's a great point, because ARPA, or DARPA now, is responsible for so many technological innovations that we, the public, probably won't learn about until several years after they've figured them out. So let's maybe talk a little bit about where DARPA comes from. It starts in 1958, right?
Yeah, and it all goes back to Sputnik. That's what it's all about. We just had to find a way to – the military had to find a way to respond as quickly as possible and as innovatively as possible to any kind of threat to national security as we could. And also we could respond to any advancements by, let's say, our enemies as quickly as possible.
Exactly. And in the late 1960s, ARPA provided funds and oversight for – this project that would become known as ARPANET. In 1972, the network had grown to 37 computers.
Man.
Which sounds small now, but it was a huge deal.
Oh, yeah. And they were all over the place, too. It wasn't as though they're networks in a building, you know, or something like that.
Right.
It was across the country.
And around this time, in 1971, that's when ARPA got changed to DARPA. So you might hear some people call the early internet DARPANET. But again, they had these name changes back and forth. The idea of adding defense to any government property or institution already strikes people as a little bit Orwellian.
Yeah.
So they went back and forth, changed the name, changed it back. And as of 1996, going forward, it's still DARPA. They get tons and tons of credit from people who are impressed by the bold achievements of this institution, but they get no small amount of criticism from opponents and journalists who say, hey, this is weird, this top secret technology. Perhaps there are some things man was not meant to know. And maybe there are, but you know, they have other notable programs. As you said, Noel, they made the internet.
That's kind of big.
I mean, that's the reason we have jobs.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We talked about the in another episode, the Corona satellite system mm-hmm. that they set up where it actually took physical pictures, actual film pictures of the Earth, and then would send the canisters down. It was really, really cool program.
And the Showtime rotisserie chicken machine.
I did not know that.
Yep. Yep. That at first it started there. It all started at DARPA.
Just set it and forget it.
They did satellites for essentially what became GPS.
Yeah.
Isn't that nice?
Well, it's nice that we finally have access to it. We can use it for our menial little, you know, errand running. What would we do without it? What would I do without it? I don't know. I would go nowhere.
You would just stay.
I would just stay at home. Yeah. I have a horrible sense of direction. So thank you, DARPA, for allowing me to live a normal, productive life.
And all we had to do is give up any vestige of privacy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fine. Have it.
And we can go back through to other things we talked about. The Vela incident. Remember this, guys, where they're detecting whether or not a nuclear explosion has occurred somewhere on Earth. Mm-hmm. They figured that out. And right after that, they figured out the computer mouse, the very first computer mouse.
Oh, that's right, from our Stuff of Genius days.
Exactly.
Yeah. Stuff of Genius is a short animated program that you can find on YouTube, on stuffofgenius.com, and so on.
And you can search for Douglas Engelbart.
That's his name. I don't know why I love that name. It's kind of like Engelbert Humperdinck or something.
Oh, yeah.
Or Benedict Cumberbatch.
Mm.
These are just fun names to say. DARPA also did a lot of innovative work with stealth aircraft.
Tons.
And they launched the first, as you said, Matt, dedicated satellite or weather satellite in this case, TROS-1.
Awesome. And that was way back in the day too, right? Mm-hmm. 1960?
Yeah, yeah. April 1st, 1960.
Dude.
So today's episode is not so much about that stuff in the past, which you can find very easily. Today's episode is about the question that should be on everyone's mind when we are dealing with the U.S.'s genuine mad science department. It's not what have they done. It's what are they doing now?
Yeah. What's coming up?
The answers might surprise you, and they should definitely frighten you. Here's where it gets crazy.
We're getting crazy already, Ben?
Yeah, we're going to be here for a while.
All right, I'm ready.
It's time.
So the biggest thing, which I think is easily predictable, right, is mm-hmm. the push for AI, artificial intelligence, what our friend Damian Williams likes to call machine consciousness.
Yeah, it's intense stuff here. And I'm going to read some portions here of a public relations release from DARPA. And they're talking about in the 1960s, they shaped the first wave of AI technologies. And that's really just them talking about systems running narrowly defined tasks, right? We kind of understand that. That's what computers do. But it says that these systems were fragile and limited. Then in the 1990s, they ushered in this second wave of AI machine learning that actually started looking at statistical pattern recognizers from large amounts of data. So taking a ton of data and going, okay, I understand patterns here. I understand patterns here. I'm, of course, the computer talking at this point. Then it says the agency's funding of natural language understanding, problem solving, navigation, and perception technologies led to the creation of things like self-driving cars, personal assistants, and near-natural prosthetics. But then DARPA goes on to say that these early AI technologies had a lot of issues, most notably that they can't provide the person actually using it with any kind of explanations of the results that they're getting. There's no understanding there. It's just put stuff in, get stuff out. And so they say they're going to address these by exploring new theories and applications that it could make it possible for machines to adapt, like on the go, to changing situations. For example, in the field, if you're in the field of battle, it can make decisions and changes as the situation changes. That's what they're talking about, this level of AI. It's a lot closer to the, you know, any biological thing that has an operating system, i.e. a brain, like mm-hmm. a human, being able to actually on the fly make those decisions.
So not just something that can ask how, something that can also ask and answer why.
Yeah, I guess.
Gross.
What could go wrong?
Yeah, well, guess what? They just announced a multi-year investment of more than 2 billion with a B dollars for new and existing programs, and they're calling it the AI Next campaign. Isn't that exciting?
It's perfect.
That's the sound of us shooting into the yeah. brave, new, terrifying future.
And then right after that, it's,
oh no!
My eyes!
I'm sorry, Matt. I can't allow that, right? Yeah, when I first when we were first reading about this, I thought it said Al Next instead of AI Next.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, oh man, I hope whatever they end up creating is its actual name is Al Next.
Yes.
So there you go, DARPA, if you're listening. they're also working on this strange program to disable botnets.
We all know what a good.
Botnet is. They're some of the most important voters in a lot of elections nowadays.
Unfortunately.
Or at least they're one of the very influential factors in a lot of elections.
They're a voting block?
Yeah, they're a bot block. But at least they're attempting to influence votes. And they're called botnets because a single person or a small group of people can run hundreds or thousands of these things that appear to be individual actors.
Yes.
So it's sort of like fingers on a hand look separate depending on the angle, but they're all still part of the same larger thing.
Except for the ring finger. It's like just a turd of a finger. It's worthless.
Yeah. Can you pop yours up?
No, man. It doesn't do anything.
I don't think a lot of people can independently. I have to forcibly hold down my other fingers.
It's embarrassing.
Nope.
It's embarrassing to humanity, though, not really. Just to us. So botnets. DARPA, on August 30th of this year, they awarded a $1.2 million contract to a private company named Packet Forensics. And what they're attempting to do is find these hidden online armies and hitting them before they can start to react. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Suppress news, influence social media, and so on. And they've gotten pretty far in a spookily small amount of time. During phase one of this project, it'll have three phases. Packet Forensics is building a technology capable of scanning about 5% of all the IP addresses in the world.
Wow.
And then detecting botnets with 80% accuracy. By the end of the program, they think DARPA will be able to analyze 80% of the entire internet and correctly spot botnets 95% of the time. That's not in itself scary, right? That's a good thing. But the problem is that level of access.
Yeah. Just going to be scanning all the IP addresses. But they're just making sure you're not a bot. It's cool.
Right.
That's cool.
Yeah, if you got nothing to hide, what are you so worried about?
You can do a captcha, right?
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. That's all they do. They look at the IP address and they force it to do a captcha.
That's what I always like to think about. If it's the end of the world and you know we're in a Terminator situation, mm-hmm. might actually work out. I'll be like a god in this new civilization because I'm the only one that could do a captcha.
Yeah.
You know what I can't do is, or I always mess up on is those, like, show me the squares where there's not a car.
Yeah.
Or where
yeah.
there's not a road sign. It seems like there's a corner of a road sign in this one.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
And there's like the bumper of the car is in this other square.
And I read something somewhere that increasingly captchas are becoming more difficult for humans to do and less difficult for computers to do.
Because it has to get harder and harder because they're getting smarter and smarter.
And we're getting dumber and dumber.
Yep.
Yeah. Not the film, the real life situation.
It is interesting. That might be some kind of, I don't know, trump card in a way. If you walk around with a big sign that it's broken up into 8 different pieces, and some of them have stairs and some of them don't, and you're just like,
I think I know what I'm going to be for Halloween.
You're going to be a captcha.
That's
brilliant. Cool.
Brilliant.
You guys don't steal that.
Let's link up. Because I want to do that too. Let's link up and we'll do different versions,
different styles,
and then yeah.
I'm committed to another series of costumes, but I want you guys to know I 100% support this. This is great.
Cervantes, like Don Quixote?
I got some stuff. I got some stuff, but I support this. I'll tell you off mic.
Okay.
After we take a word from our sponsors.
Let's do it.
Hey, girlfriends. It's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season three of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, that's a great costume. They would be so surprised. I feel bad that you guys don't know.
It's on the level of the CAPTCHA, but I think the CAPTCHA is an awesome idea.
Just follow Ben on Instagram, and you will probably see pictures. Somebody else posting them, probably, though.
Who knows? We don't want to spoil it. But speaking of strange segues, you know what else we don't want to spoil?
The human body?
Yes, the bodies of people wounded in war or other mishaps. DARPA is developing treatments that literally slow down the body's biochemical reaction. You guys have heard the stories before about maybe a hiker who gets stranded in snow, or they fall all of a sudden into freezing water and their body functions drastically, like the activity of their body drastically reduces, almost in a state of suspended animation, or they're hibernating. And the weird thing is, often, if given the right circumstances, these people can come back even if they haven't been, you know, breathing ostensibly for a long time.
That is, I mean, it's incredible.
So what if we could do that on purpose? What if someone were seriously wounded, we could stop the clock, stop time in their body essentially until we can get them to a hospital or a medical professional?
You mean like what Walt Disney did, or?
But not just the head, the whole thing.
Okay, sort of like the cryo sleep from the Alien movies.
Yeah, yeah,
something
quite similar.
Like that.
Yeah. So their motto is slow life to save life, which isn't that creative, but they're doing cool stuff.
Yeah. What's the science behind this, Ben?
This is pretty solid stuff. We're attempting to replicate processes that already exist in other organisms on Earth. For example, water bears, which are some of the toughest things we know of, also called tardigrades, can survive all kinds of crazy stuff, extreme radiation, freezing, dehydration, and they do it by entering this cryptobiosis state in which all of their metabolic functions appear to cease, like circulation, muscle movement, electrical activity.
But you know what doesn't stop?
What's that?
Their cuteness. That's forever.
I don't know, man. As long as they're microscopic, I'm fine with them. But I imagine somewhere out in space, if other life exists, there are gigantic ones that span galaxies.
You don't think tardigrades are adorbs?
No.
Okay.
No.
Fair enough. To each our own.
To each their own. Hey, more tardigrades for you, man.
I'll take them all.
Please do.
They're your real Pokemon, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to start a menagerie of tardigrades.
I like the name. That has a ring to it. A menagerie of tardigrades.
That's a new DARPA program. It's trying to make the human body at least 80% tardigrades.
So first, the scientists working on this are trying to figure out how to slow things down on a smaller scale. Mm-hmm. Certain cells, certain tissues, and eventually they want to be able to stop a entire organism.
Wow.
So the treatment's going to be successful if it slows down all biological functions within a system and, most importantly, doesn't damage the cells or the processes when they're back at normal living speed. That's important because in a lot of cryogenic stuff, you know, the stories we hear about people with a terminal disease freezing their body in hopes that down the yardstick. That makes no sense.
I thought you were going to say down the bike.
Down the yellow brick road.
There we go. Somewhere in the bold, amazing future, they will be unfrozen and treated with amazing medical breakthroughs, saving their life. However, the problem with that is that water expands when it freezes.
Yep.
And our bodies are mostly water. So there's potential for tremendous cellular damage.
Yeah.
But if the tardigrades can figure it out, says DARPA scientist, then you know what? So can we.
Yeah, I agree with them. I think there is probably an answer there, but that whole micro-macro problem, just things don't function the same way at different sizes.
I think it might not scale up, huh?
Maybe it does, but I think it could also be the point of being that small, like from an evolutionary perspective, mm-hmm. like why they survived for so long at that level.
Ah, and that size.
Mm-hmm.
I have an ethical question for you guys.
All right.
There's not really a correct answer for this. This is an opinion. I just want to see what you think. So do you all have Fitbits? Do you guys ever use those?
I do not.
I do not either, but I use the fitness tracking capabilities of my phone, which is probably admittedly less precise. But it does a decent job.
Do you sleep with it under your pillow?
No. Why?
Okay. Or on your bed?
Is that a thing?
Yeah, it'll track sleep if you
– Yeah.
Put it next to you.
And really? Some friends who track sleep.
You may also get a dose of radiation, a little extra. But who cares?
Yeah, maybe. But the reason I ask is because these things are really valuable. We can get instant feedback through our phone or through an app on our phone about our life. Things that you might not expect, like your mean body temperature, the phase of sleep you're in, of course, your heart rate, the number of steps you take, et cetera, mm-hmm. and so on. What if you could have that feedback occur instantaneously in real time through an implant, an implantable health tracker. Would you do it? Would you be comfortable with that?
I guess the idea for this to make sense for DARPA or for some defense purpose, it would have to be sending signals constantly back to whatever command, wherever that is, so they know where every soldier is. I mean, not only because you easily put GPS in there too, where the soldier is, what the soldier is doing, if the soldier is feeling stressed out, because does it have anything beyond the standard Fitbit?
Yes.
Okay, what else is it gathering?
So it gathers what it calls relevant biomarkers, which include things like stress hormones, so it can monitor cortisol.
Wow.
Compounds that signal inflammation like histamine.
So you could see if a soldier has been injured, essentially, if there's any inflammation in that way.
Does it track their XP?
It probably does because it'll say their rank.
There you go.
So you have to know. I don't think there's a reason for them to anonymize that data. If we're talking about soldiers, they've already given up a lot of their rights.
And surely there's a way to gamify this whole system and allow them to win, achievements and stuff and shoot for that, That level up.
We know people do that. So there's another thing. They want to monitor nutritional biomarkers to track diets.
Oh, wow.
And they wanted to see how they could use this data to conduct new medical studies since they're going to have so much just raw information. They want to see how people's genes impact physical ability. They want to manipulate cellular mitochondria to boost the body's energy levels.
They want to make Ubermensch. That's what it sounds like.
I mean, all of this is getting toward that area. So the question is, think about how this might roll out in the public sphere. So in the U.S., privatized insurance companies are the gatekeepers of most medical care.
Yes.
This is a developed country where people will die of easily curable conditions because they didn't have enough money.
It's just a fact.
And that's not an opinion. It's not controversial. It's just the state of affairs. Mm-hmm. So what if a private insurance company that gave you coverage, wrote to you and said, we'll take X percent off of your bill, and it's a significant percent off of your policy or whatever, if you and your dependents agree to have one of these trackers implanted? Would you do it? How much money would it have to be?
It would have to be a lot of money.
So if they were like, we'll take 50% off your insurance.
Ooh.
If you and your another and your child get these.
Oh, this is tough because I know I would never sign up for it, but I am positive, and she can check me on this if she wants to, but I'm positive that my wife would go for that because she had an Apple Watch with all that stuff on it for a while, and she loved having the data, and I feel like she would like this too.
What about you, Noel? Would you take that bargain?
I don't know. It would probably tell them things about me that I didn't want them to know. And make my insurance premiums go up.
There we go. Yeah, that's a concern too. Plus, we imagine you have no control over who sees this, and they're going to sell it back and forth.
Well, it's the same thing with the idea of a pre-existing condition, right? As soon as you get diagnosed with something, then it's on your permanent health record, and this is just an escalation of that, right? Mm-hmm. And that could, in a world, be a problem for some people getting insured. Right now, it's on the books that you can't get messed with for having a pre-existing condition, but that could change,
Right, right. And that was a pretty recent change.
Very recent change and a very divisive change. And so in this great unknown future of ours, how can we depend on the kindness of big government? It has not shown us to be a thing in the past.
How can we depend on the kindness of big anything?
Exactly.
That's a good point.
Big pharmacy, big whatever. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got incentives and reasons, and they're not always looking out for you and your actual best interest. So I don't know. I don't know that – that's a lot, Ben. That's a lot. Asking a lot to just jack into the network like that and just what are they going to put you up on a leaderboard? Are you all of a sudden going to be ranked by your physical stamina and your stats?
And then you would have to pick one weirdly specific thing if you wanted to get to the top of the leaderboard. – You'd have to be like, most reliable cortisol emissions.
At the very least, I picture some sort of mission control or like air traffic control hub where it's just dozens of screens with like all of the, you know, if we're talking specifically a military use, all of the soldiers in the field being monitored and such. Mm-hmm. But if it was expanded beyond that, then what? Then what, Ben?
There's one crazier step. There's one step further, one step beyond, and it's something that you'll hear speculation about, but you won't hear a lot of concrete admissions into this sort of research. So now we're at the point where we can monitor these processes. This means that it's not impossible for us to take the next step and create or influence certain bodily reactions, meaning that in the future, someone fighting in a war could have their hormone levels remotely controlled, or maybe even, you know, like increase the heart rate, visual acuity. You're less sleepy now.
It reminds me of if you've ever played StarCraft, a remote stim pack kind of thing, where somebody at command could activate the stim packs on a whole battalion or something who's about to go in on the ground. And now they're just hyped and ready to go in and be at war.
Right. And I know how sci-fi and dystopian that sounds, but we have to realize that multiple countries have done and will do stuff like this. World War II was in some ways fueled by methamphetamine, right?
Yeah, really.
And even if I recall, even fairly recently, long-range pilots on some military craft did take stimulants to stay awake during these tremendously long flights.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's the thing. If you agree to be monitored, are you required to get a hardware update? Is it in the terms of service that the next time they decide to get something that does influence bodily processes?
It might just be firmware. You never know.
Yeah.
Just scan your arm and update the software, essentially.
Yeah. Spooky stuff.
Yeah.
Do you think there's like a button where like you could like make somebody poop themselves?
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm just taking this to the playground.
No, I think it's – I mean, of course you could do that. It's not – it wouldn't be that hard to make someone evacuate their bowels.
I think that's the whole point. It's like, you know, in theory, you could tap into these systems in a way that you could do all kinds of different things.
Yeah. Imagine a hack in a country where this system is in place and just tens of thousands of people crap themselves at once.
But surely just a device that was designed exclusively for monitoring couldn't just be flipped – using only technology and electronics. It would have to be like
hardware,
surgically
right?
hardwired in a way that it actually touched all these systems and could, you know, affect the levels of these brain chemicals.
Right. It would have to be a different doodad probably.
Well, here's the thing, guys. There's another DARPA project that has to do specifically with the mind being able to control various pieces of hardware and software, basically using the mind as your keyboard and your mouse, which there are already some rudimentary versions of this in early stage, you know, early levels of being able to do this, where you are strapped into a big piece of machinery that, you know, has a bunch of wires that go from sensors on your head, your skull, into a big supercomputer, and then it's crunching all the numbers as it's reading essentially your brainwaves and activity within sectors of your brain. Well, what DARPA wants to do is have essentially a helmet, a system that goes inside a helmet for every soldier and or pilot and or just whoever else is out on the field, where they could control systems not only possibly hardware systems, but also just seeing software and having visuals of what they're looking at. Essentially, if you ever hit option when you're playing a first-person shooter and you go to the map and look at the overlay, they really want to be able to do that for every soldier.
And why wouldn't you? And then also imagine this is getting muddied because you'll see a lot of these programs – at some point do converge, emerge. So imagine a soldier that uses this brain-computer interface to orchestrate the movements of drones. So a single soldier with their own retinue of UAVs of differing sizes and stuff. And,
yeah.
And you just – you sick Fido or the Raptor or whatever on the target, or you send it out to get a look around the corner for you. I mean, obviously – that's a great idea. If,
yeah, if you're in charge and you're the one with all the guns and the drones and the brain interfaces.
And now, you know, of course, the next question is when does that go to the public?
Yeah.
Are children in the future going to grow up with drones that are their pet drones, similar to the way kids grow up with cats and dogs today?
It's possible, but the one thing that it is currently being used for, a lot of this technology, is to control something like a prosthetic limb. Mm-hmm. Like if you've got a full arm amputation or injury where you've lost your arm, you've got a prosthetic on there, using some of these systems where it can actually sense parts of your muscles, like where there's a neurochemical signal being sent from your brain down to your shoulder or something, mm-hmm. You can both see those at the brain level when it's being sent and then when it reaches your shoulder. And when you connect those two signals up, you can actually teach your arm and your brain to control an entire limb that you could not be able to do without just using your brain.
It's pretty incredible.
It's crazy cool. But then you extrapolate that to something like an exoskeleton or go really crazy, go to like the Pacific Rim kind of thing. Where it's a giant...
A Jaeger?
Like, yeah, exactly.
A mech?
No, I mean, for real, though. And I know that's it's kind of silly to even imagine that, but that's just one of the first steps to getting
I think
there.
The word you're looking for is awesome.
I loved Pacific Rim.
Oh, I know.
No regrets. I know it's a big, dumb movie, and I love both of them. I hope they make a third one.
I liked Voltron, too.
Well, it's not as neat as Voltron because they can't – well, spoilers.
They don't have a giant laser sword and they're all in like – what were they? Wolves or something? Like I forget what they were. They're different mechs.
They're like panthers, right?
They're panthers.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I think. Write in and let us know. While we're on the subject of drones, let's examine an assumption that a lot of people have made, myself included at least, whenever the subject comes up. It's the idea that drones are all aerial, airborne.
They're not.
We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Hey, girlfriends. It's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season three of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ben, are we talking about aqua drones?
We are, Noel. We are talking about submarine killers. DARPA is aiming to build a fleet of unmanned ships called Anti-Submarine Warfare Continuous Trail Unmanned Vessels, to be pronounced ACTIV for short. And they built a prototype of it.
ACTIV.
They sure did. The very first prototype was meant to demonstrate the potential of what would become an entire fleet of these unmanned ships called Anti-Submarine Warfare Continuous Trail Unmanned Vessels. Beautifully, it'd be pronounced ACTIV for short. So these 132-foot-long vessels were able to reach top speeds of 27 knots. That's during a test in Portland, Oregon, and will be ready for the open seas this summer. Mm-hmm. And apparently they're going to launch them from the California coast. And it looks like it was actually christened on April 7th. And the Navy is pretty stoked about the potential for an unmanned, quote, unmanned vessel optimized to robustly track quiet diesel-electric submarines. That should be an acronym, too.
Yeah.
It's true. This is stuff that you can set out on the open ocean and just program it with a couple of commands that it will follow. And
Yikes.
That's a good way to put it.
They're just out there like like a blue whale just is in the ocean. Mm-hmm. It's just there.
They could do other things too. They can supply other ships. Mm-hmm. They can search for undersea mines. They can aid in really complex situations like oil exploration would be one, right? Deep sea investigations. It's much less of a tragedy when a disaster occurs on board an unmanned submarine.
Correct.
So how long can these things be out on the ocean? Get this, 3 months.
3 months.
It's doing pretty well. In initial test, the submarine killing drone, the prototype at least, tracked a submarine from a kilometer away. And the Pentagon says this is a major improvement in technology. We have a quote from Rear Admiral Frank Drennan, the commander of the Naval Mine and Anti-Submarine Warfare Command.
Picking up the quiet hum of a battery-powered diesel-electric submarine in a busy coastal water is like trying to identify the sound of a single car engine in the din of a major city.
Matt, that was a really good Rear Admiral Frank Drennan impersonation. I have to give you credit for that.
Wasn't even really doing a voice, but I liked it.
Matt does a lot of research into the characterization of any quote. He's sort of the Daniel Day-Lewis of podcast quotery.
And he handles it with respect and dignity.
Mm-hmm.
I should have done it like this.
Picking up the quiet hum of a battery-powered diesel-electric submarine in a busy coastal waters is like trying to identify the sound of a single car engine in the din of a major city.
Who is that? I love that guy.
It sounds like that guy gives, like...
He's a wizard.
It sounds like he gives crumpled butterscotch candies to people on the street.
Ooh, I could see that.
Oh, man. What are those? Werther's Original?
Yeah. Grandpa always had those.
And then, while we're on the subject of drones, why stop at one drone? Why not build a swarm?
What?
Yeah,
I've heard about these.
So they want to take a C-130.
Okay. Giant plane.
And have it launch and recover swarms of drones by some point in 2019. They're calling it the Gremlins program.
Woo!
Of course, named after the imaginary mischievous imps that became good luck charms for British pilots in World War II and got a lot of national recognition in the Twilight Zone.
That's really nice because there was a gremlin on the plane. It was on the wing.
Uh-huh. Or was there?
No.
But what they're attempting to do is lower the cost of the previous platforms. Once they're dispatched, these drones can accomplish any number of things, electronic warfare, surveillance, signals intelligence, and even what are called kinetic effects, a.k.a. offensive capabilities.
Yes, they're so offensive, those capabilities.
And when they complete their mission, they fly back to that aircraft that retrieves them midair and carries them home where they could be – or carries them back to their headquarters.
Yeah.
Where the human ground crew, for now, will prepare them for their next use within 24 hours.
It's crazy. There are videos of these gremlin swarms that you can see, and it looks like a refueling of, let's see, an F-14 or whatever when it's going to get refueled by a jet, and this just has to dock, right? The two planes have to dock. These things, they look like missiles, essentially, that have a small wingspan on them, and they just automatically – through their internal systems, fly up and they attach themselves to this plane, to the other C-130 or whatever it is that's capturing them. Mm-hmm. Just pulls them right in and it just continues to do that. And it can do it with, I forget how many it can fit in one C-130, but it was, like you said, a swarm of these things that can be deployed and then just brought right back.
Yeah, they each have a range of 300 miles while carrying a 60-pound payload. So these aren't the same, you know, like, cutesy drones you can buy as a stocking stuffer.
No. And the crazy thing about them is that they all work in concert. It is literally a swarm. What all of them, all of the information gathered by all of them is sent back to essentially a single user or set of users that are looking at all of this stuff.
So it's almost like a hive mind or something.
It is. And what they'll use them for is to circle an area of operations and you basically have an overview of the entire area.
Is it almost like a three-dimensional map or something that they can generate? Or
I guarantee you what I've seen online is not a representation of what is actually being viewed by the operators because you wouldn't want to share that for security reasons. But it looks intense.
It's such a – there's such potential for a cartoonish comic book level supervillain.
Yeah.
Like the drone man. Nah, wait, we need a better name. better than
drone dude. Dr. Drone?
That's it. Dr. Drone. Let's make a t-shirt with Dr. Drone. So it's quite possible that in the future, one person, one human being could be – with assistance from some computers, right, and some algorithms, one person could control multiple drones with a very high level of sophistication. And their big goal is to make each of these drones cost less than $500,000 as we know.
Hey, there you go. That's nice.
So Dr. Drone also has to be pretty well off. That's like a million for two drones.
Well, yeah. All you need to do is maybe start stashing couple trillion dollars over the course of a couple decades.
Dr. Drone.
You know, just like the DOD did, the Pentagon, trillions of dollars.
Uh-huh, right.
Can't find the money.
Off the books. We just lost the pallets.
Oh, my God.
So that?
Yeah, exactly. And they're working on keeping a human body alive after
mm-hmm.
death.
Mm-hmm.
They're working on all of these advanced technologies to control AI.
Yes.
They are going to turn themselves into super somethings. Let's call them villains for now, that will live forever.
They're building Dr. Drone. Never dies, only sleeps.
And you know what you need when you've got a bunch of reconnaissance drones overhead that are giving you the main macro view of everything that's going on?
What do we need?
You need some tiny little spies that can give you the micro view.
That's correct. Yes. Robot insect spies.
When I think of swarm, that's what I think of. Yeah.
Yeah. And this would not be difficult to pull off either.
Do you remember that episode of Black Mirror in the most recent season where there were like tiny robot insect drones that did things?
Is that the season before?
Yeah, it was in the second season, and it was the long one. It was almost like feature length.
It was. I remember this.
And that's very much what we're talking about here, only a different application.
Yeah.
They've tested several different sorts of insects as part of a program they call High MEMS, and they've tested with flying moths mm-hmm. and beetles. And they found that this is where it gets spooky.
Yeah,
this
goes crazy.
Back to the implantable medical tracking device. The research shows that it is possible through the use of implants to control where these creatures fly. So you're not just letting them out and then having a tiny camera report back. You are able to force their movements.
Yeah. And the creepiest part about this is that through research, they found that you cut a pupa in half. If you're talking about a moth/butterfly, you cut the pupa in half. After it's been like a larva and everything, it gets to the stage where it's about to metamorphosize into the next version, the moth or the butterfly. And you put the implant in there at that stage. And then the butterfly or moth develops with this implant attached to it.
Right.
It is so creepy and insane looking and imagining that. Because it makes you imagine implanting a child maybe or something at a certain stage, a human child, that would then grow into their implant.
And here's the thing. We don't know if these bugs, these robo-bugs, are actually out in the field now or exactly where the research has gone, you know?
No. Even Snopes said it's true and false.
Right. Yeah, there's a report from 2016 on inverse.com that has some news about this. I believe the research on something like this began all the way back in the 1940s. They just later said, hey, insects already have this figured out.
Yeah. You know?
So they may be a real thing. They may be coming to a battlefield near you. And maybe you'll notice. So let us know if you see any bug with really strange-looking electronics on it.
Please?
Yes.
Send pictures?
What you probably will not see is the blimps, the airships. Remember those? Hindenburg disaster, et cetera, et cetera. The problem with airships is that they are quite vulnerable.
Mm.
So despite being a really cool way to surveil an area or even just a cool way to get around – The fear of an attack on a blimp has prevented them from becoming more common.
It just takes a little bit of a flak cannon aimed in the right spot.
Right, right. So DARPA has taken over this plan, and they are building very high altitude.
Giant
airships. They want to make these airborne aircraft carriers. And you will likely not see them. You will likely not know they exist unless you get in the way of someone.
Yeah. It is creepy because they're talking about, like you said, carrying an entire battalion of troops and all the medical supplies, all the supplies needed for setting up a base, all the supplies needed for even some heavy weapons and all these other things, all in this giant blimp, like you said, like an aircraft carrier. that just hangs out way up there ready to deploy.
Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine, I don't know, treating it like a base, essentially a mobile base where they're just stationed there for a certain amount of time until they're deployed.
Like the helicarrier, or what's it called in Marvel movies?
I know what you're talking about. I don't know the name of it.
Or like in Bioshock, the second Bioshock, or no, the third Bioshock game, the one where with all the blimps.
Is that the Americana?
Yeah, the Americana version? One. There were a lot of blimps deploying little fighter jets and
yeah,
things.
Yeah, it's like that, but in this case, it's a giant city. I guess it was kind of like that.
Yeah, it kind of was.
Yeah, there you go.
The other thing that's cool, if we're doing pop culture references, do you guys remember that film Wanted?
Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow?
Oh, no. I don't want to remember that one.
Are you talking about the one – wait, okay. I never saw that movie. I need to see that movie.
It's gorgeous from a cinematography design perspective. I think it's got a really cool aesthetic.
Sky Captain for sure.
It had a lot of big blimps though, I think, too.
It did, yeah.
But you said Wanted? You mean like yeah. with Angelina Jolie?
This uh-huh. is the
– She was in Sky Captain too.
I know. Oh. She had a cool eye patch if I recall.
That's right.
Yeah, so
– like spinning the bullet or whatever? Mm-hmm. I forget what they called it.
Yeah, I don't remember what they called it. The comic book adaptation holds up a little bit better, I think.
Okay.
Right. Self-guided bullets. In the film adaptation Wanted, the assassins are able to use the powers of their mind to change the direction, the trajectory of a bullet after it's fired. Pretty neat.
Yeah.
Weirdly specific superpower.
But it's cool.
DARPA is working on it. DARPA is working on making that in real life, building ammunition with a guidance system to keep it on target. Right now, the specifics about how that works are classified and probably will be classified. And it might be a situation where we don't learn that this technology exists until we hear reports of it being used in war or in a conflict.
Yikes.
Kind of like we didn't really know that people had stealth helicopters until one crashed.
Dude, there is a thing. It's a website called futurism.com. And they're purporting to have a video of what they're calling Exacto, the Extreme Accuracy Tasked Ordnance. And it's a system that they're demonstrating where it's showing a guided bullet. Whoa. And it's pretty crazy. So I don't know if I believe this. Yeah. So it's showing a red line, which is the trajectory of where the bullet as it's being fired and sent down towards this target. It shows you where it would be. And then it shows the moving target way in the distance, and it shows the bullet change directions and follow the target and actually hit the target.
That's crazy.
That's insane.
It's from DARPA TV. It's from their actual YouTube channel.
So they'll show it in action, but they won't tell you how the nuts and bolts of how it works.
Exactly.
How is this technology much different from like guided missiles, for example, or like, you know, heat seekers or whatever? It's just more micro technology.
Oh, you're talking about
the bullet.
The bullet, yeah. I mean, that's essentially what it is. There are some bullets you can get that are considered rocket bullets, essentially, that actually shoot out exhaust as they're being fired through the air.
Yikes.
So it's kind of like this. It's just somehow there is either a small CPU or something that's guiding it, like that's actually inside the piece of metal that you're firing from a weapon, working with some other system that's tracking whatever the target is. It seems so futuristic.
And these are just a few of the fascinating, frightening, and sometimes inspiring things that DARPA is working on. We do want to be clear that a lot of what DARPA does is just facilitate independent researchers.
Yeah, it gives you money.
It gives you money, it gives you support, and it gives you direction, right?
Yes, but it is one of those things where you can see all of these varying compartmentalized programs where perhaps purposefully DARPA makes it unknown to the left arm what the right arm is doing and all of that situation. Sure. Because if you add up some of these programs, you're not only getting super soldiers, you're not only getting
Dr. Drone,
but it genuinely creeps me out just thinking that a single force or a country or power will have access to these things at some point in the future.
But there's another argument to be made here, which is dangerous. It's kind of sticky. The argument is if we don't do it, says insert country here, then someone else will.
It's too good of an argument.
We either build the bullets or we get shot by them.
Yeah.
And it's – I mean it's kind of a – zero-sum equation way of thinking, but it does have some validity to it. And the truth is that DARPA is very P. Diddy about this. Can't stop, won't stop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's this feedback loop of research, success, and investment. And it is an important thing. We can't stress enough. There are tremendous medical innovations that occur because of this sort of research, but it goes hand in hand with these other goals a nation state would have. I mean, to sum it up, when we talk about what DARPA is working on, we don't know what we don't know, but we can guess. As you said, Matt, we can put pieces together. You can write to DARPA directly and ask them. They have a great PR department, but they're very clear when they're like, well, some things have to be classified because it's a matter of national security. That doesn't automatically mean they're devious, but it does mean that there is stuff they don't want you to know.
Correct. But they are working with a ton of independent contractors. So maybe you could get more information from someone on that lower tier end.
Yeah.
Just saying, good information hunting, everyone.
Indeed.
So let us know what you think. Is DARPA on balance a good thing? Do you think that there are some programs that are so secret that no one knows about them?
Right? There's got to be.
I'm sure there's something, but I wonder what it is. You know, maybe the real secret is just not what they're doing, but how far along the research has gone, right?
Yeah, I could totally see that. And I could also see the big secret being how the systems are working together or how the projects are fitting together. That's like the lowest levels of the secret bases.
So we'd like to hear your opinion. I also want to recommend DARPA's podcast.
They do. They have a pretty fun podcast.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And there are some great explanations by various scientists and project managers.
Is it called the DARPA cast? Because that's a missed opportunity if it's not.
Is it just the DARPA podcast?
Ugh, come on, guys.
Yeah, it's just the DARPA podcast. You should write to them. Say DARPA cast.
I'll fill out a comment card.
Maybe they'll join the Stuff Media Network. Maybe we can bring them in.
I would love to hear that. We'd also love to hear from you. So let us know your thoughts on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Find us on our Facebook page. Here's Where It Gets Crazy. And also, if the spirit soap moves you, if you feel so inclined, please feel free to visit your podcast platform of choice and toss a rating our way.
Especially on Apple Podcasts / iTunes. It really does help us move up the rankings, have a little more visibility. It's very kind, and we would appreciate it.
It's all about that algorithm.
And if you'd like to talk to us directly, you can call us. We are 1-833-STDWYTK.
Got it in the tail end of that one.
It's just stuff they don't want you to know, but an acronym, but in numbers. And if you don't want to do any of that stuff, check it out. The best way to reach us is to send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money in markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.